60 Books, presented by Store Consulting and Coaching. Iraq 2004. The commander of the American Special Operations Task Force is looking at the numbers and reaching a conclusion he does not want to reach. His people are the most highly trained, best equipped, most heavily resourced force ever assembled for this kind of work. Their enemy is a loose network with improvised weapons and no formal command structure, and his side is losing. Today, Team of Teams by Stanley McChrystal. In two sentences, an organization built for efficiency will lose to a network built for adaptability because the world it was optimized for has stopped being predictable. The fix is to make information radically shared and decisions radically distributed. From the reading room, this is 60 Books. I'm Miles. 60 of the best management books of the last 100 years, one per episode, read for leaders and teams who think differently, and for work where AI is now part of the job. Nora, what was actually going wrong?
Nothing that any individual could see. Each unit was excellent. Each intelligence agency was competent, and the seams between them were where everything was lost.
Give me an example of a seam.
A raid recovers documents and a laptop. Those go to an intelligence cell, which processes them in a queue. By the time the analysis reaches the operators who could act on it, the opportunity is gone. Nobody made an error. The process worked exactly as designed, and the design was too slow for the problem.
And his diagnosis.
This is the intellectual heart of the book, and it is the distinction I would keep even if you forget the rest. The difference between complicated and complex.
Define both.
A complicated system has many parts and predictable relationships. A jet engine is complicated. You can take it apart, understand each piece, and predict what it will do. A complex system has parts whose interactions produce behavior you cannot predict from the pieces. A city is complex. A market is complex. An insurgency is complex.
And the management implication.
A century of management practice is built for complicated problems. Break the work into parts, optimize each part, specify the steps. That is Taylorism, and it produced extraordinary gains. It fails on complex problems because in a complex environment, the plan is obsolete before it is distributed.
What replaces it?
Two things, and they are the whole book: shared consciousness and empowered execution.
Shared consciousness first.
The idea that everyone in the organization needs enough context to understand what is happening across it, not just in their own lane. His main instrument was a daily briefing, run over video, that eventually included thousands of people across agencies and continents, running about 90 minutes every day for years.
What happened in it?
Operations and intelligence reported openly. Junior people spoke. And critically, McChrystal treated his own visible attention as the product. He attended without exception, asked questions rather than issuing corrections, and made it clear that the way to be valued was to contribute information.
And the second half?
Empowered execution. Once people share context, decisions can move to them. He describes progressively pushing approval authority downward until strike decisions that had required his sign-off were being made several levels below him. His phrase for his own role was eyes on, hands off.
Which we have heard.
In episode 5, Marquet on the submarine, moving authority to the information rather than information to the authority, and doing it in written increments. Same idea, different scale, and the two books are the strongest pair on the shelf.
The author.
Stanley McChrystal. West Point, class of 1976, a career in special operations. He commanded the Joint Special Operations Command from 2003 to 2008, which is the period this book describes, then commanded international forces in Afghanistan.
And that ended badly.
It did, and it belongs in the record. In 2010, a magazine profile quoted him and his staff making dismissive remarks about civilian officials, and he resigned. He now teaches at Yale and runs a consulting firm, and the book was written with three co-authors, including former officers who served with him.
Now the neurodiversity turn, and I think this is one of the most favorable books we have covered.
It is, and the reason is that its central intervention removes inference.
Say more.
A great deal of the invisible work in an organization is working out context that nobody has stated. What is actually going on? Why this suddenly matters? Who is worried about what? Most people do this by reading rooms, picking up hallway signals, and interpreting tone. It is unreliable for everyone, and it is substantially harder if you do not read those channels.
And shared consciousness
replaces all of it with a stated briefing. The context is said out loud, on a schedule, to everyone, in the same words. That is the most thorough accessibility intervention in this series, and it was adopted for operational reasons by people who had never heard the word.
The ritual matters too.
Same time, same structure, same format every day. Predictable, explicit, and information dense. If you were designing a meeting for someone who needs to know what to expect and hates ambiguity, you would design that one.
An empowered execution
requires clarity of intent, which means writing down what the objective is and what the boundaries are, which converts a great deal of anxious permission seeking into ordinary work, exactly as first, break all the rules argued in episode 11 with outcomes rather than steps.
Now the cost, because I do not want to be uncritical here.
The cost is real and the book does not dwell on it. 90 minutes of video conference every day with thousands of participants is an enormous sensory and attention load. For someone with auditory processing difficulty, a fast-moving multi-speaker call is close to the worst possible format. For someone with ADHD, 90 minutes of mostly irrelevant material is not a neutral experience.
So the principle is right, and the medium is questionable.
The principle is shared context. The medium was a video call because it was 2005 in a war zone. Today, the same principle is served by a written daily brief that is skimmable, searchable, and can be read at speed, with the call reserved for what needs discussion. That version is better for almost everyone and dramatically better for some.
One more piece.
He embedded liaison officers, sending his best people to sit inside partner agencies rather than sending his worst, which is the usual practice. The point was that trust between organizations is carried by specific humans, not by process documents. Worth stealing, and worth noting that it works only if the person sent has the standing to be listened to.
There is a piece of history in the book that I think earns its place.
The Prussian idea, usually translated as mission command, developed in the 19th century after the Prussian army was destroyed by Napoleon. The conclusion they drew was that an army whose subordinate commanders wait for orders will always be slower than the situation, so officers were trained to be told the intent and the constraints and then left to work out the method.
So this is not new.
It is roughly 200 years old, which is worth saying to any executive who presents it as a modern insight. What is new is the claim that the environment has changed enough that the alternative is no longer viable.
And there is a distinction about the leader's role.
His phrase is that a leader should be less like a chess master and more like a gardener. The chess master moves every piece. The gardener sets the conditions, waters, and does not pull on the plants. He is honest that he found this excruciating because his instinct and his entire training pointed at moving the pieces.
Which is the same admission Marquet made.
The hardest part of both books is the same sentence, stop supplying the answer. And it is worth naming why that is hard for a certain kind of leader. If you are the fastest pattern matcher in the room, silence feels like waste. It is not waste. It is the only condition under which anyone else develops judgment.
What has not held up?
The evidence problem is the familiar one. This is one organization, in one conflict, told by its commander. There is no counterfactual. And the outcome is genuinely contested, because the network the task force fought so effectively did not stay defeated, and its successor organization became a larger problem several years later.
Which is awkward for a book about winning.
It is, and the honest reading is that the operational transformation was real, and the strategic result was not what the tempo implied. That is a caution about metrics as much as anything. The task force got extraordinarily good at the activity it was measuring.
The transfer question.
The same one we raised with Marquet. A special operations task force is one of the most heavily selected and trained populations that exists, operating with unlimited resources and shared life and death stakes. Shared consciousness worked partly because everyone in it had passed the same brutal filter. In an ordinary organization with turnover and uneven training, radical transparency can produce noise rather than consciousness.
And the cost side?
Rarely counted. 90 minutes a day multiplied by thousands of people is a staggering amount of labor, and the book presents it as obviously worthwhile without ever showing the arithmetic.
And there is a scope objection.
The book generalizes from an environment with an unusually clear objective. Everyone in that task force agreed on what winning looked like on a given night. Most organizations do not have that, and shared consciousness in a place where people disagree about the goal produces faster, better informed disagreement rather than alignment.
Which is not nothing.
It is not nothing, and it is not what the book promises.
The tier.
A single, vividly told case with one durable conceptual distinction, complicated versus complex, that is worth the price of the book on its own.
The recap in this show's frame. Team of Teams says share context radically and push decisions to where the information is. For a neurodivergent leader, or one leading neurodivergent people, this is close to a manual. Stating context on a schedule replaces the invisible labor of inferring it, which is work your team is doing whether or not you know. Predictable rituals with a fixed structure are accessible by design. Clarity of intent turns permission seeking into ordinary work. And the one change I would make to his method is to move the daily brief into writing, because the principle was shared context, not a 90-minute call. And AI.
This is the book where the tools map most directly onto the mechanism, because shared consciousness is fundamentally an information routing problem.
Go.
The reason organizations do not have shared context is that producing it is expensive. Somebody has to synthesize what happened across 12 teams into something readable. That was a full-time job, and now it is not. A daily written brief assembled from the actual artifacts, tickets, commits, notes, and messages is the version of McChrystal's briefing that a normal company can afford.
And the search problem?
Equally large. His seam was that the information existed and could not be found in time. Being able to ask a question in plain language against everything the organization knows is exactly the capability the task force lacked.
The dangers.
Two, and the first is his own warning. Shared consciousness was context for human judgment, not a substitute for it. If the summary becomes the only thing anyone reads, the organization has traded understanding for briefing, and it will not notice until something outside the summary matters.
And the second.
Radical transparency has a surveillance twin. The same instrumentation that produces shared context produces monitoring, and the difference is entirely in what it is used for. A neurodivergent employee whose working pattern is unusual has the most to lose if the answer is that everything is visible to management rather than to everyone.
The usual caution.
Evidence that AI support improves outcomes for neurodivergent workers is early and mostly practitioner reports. Promising practice, not established fact.
Nora, thank you.
Anytime, thanks, Miles.
That is Team of Teams. Next time on 60 Books, Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, and a principle that is either the most useful idea on the shelf or the most dangerous, depending entirely on who is holding it. I'm Miles. See you then.